Now, what on earth does that mean? I think I spent about nearly 50 years waking up every week thinking, how on earth am I going to solve a particular problem? And most of them came from inside the box. They were blindingly obvious, and all the better for that, I hope. So mine is about no-nonsense new brands, and let me take you through my story if I can work this machine. Oh, anybody recognise that gentleman?
Oh, yes.
Sir Anthony.
Yeah, because in Ireland, I mean, if you try this in a business school in Glasgow, nobody has the slightest idea who he is and who he was. I first came across him in Johannesburg in 1955 when he was on the wing for the British. The British Lions, there was no Irish. There was this big pink ginger guy. He was just awesomely good. And little did I know that 7 years later, I'd be sitting opposite him in an office. I was 24 when he was 28. He was the general manager of the Irish Dairy Board and one of the most charismatic, decisive people I ever worked with, I think. And I worked in an ad agency, and I was a minor functionary in transforming Irish butter from a commodity, which commanded very little price, to a brand, which was Kerrygold in the agency that produced it. And working with O'Reilly was an amazing experience, because he was incredibly good at taking decisions. He taught me a huge amount. But move on. That was 63, and they fast forward to 1973. And back in those days, I worked a lot in the drinks business, and the drinks business in the UK particularly was incredibly gentlemanly. These very posh public school types who liked fine wine and always held their wine by the stem, which I didn't understand. They said I had the palate of a plumber, which I think is a compliment. The plumbers had a lot more money than I did in those days. But anyway, we had something which we called the Wexford Whisper. Somebody in Ireland said to somebody from London, who said to somebody else from London, who said to another person in London, who said to me that the Irish want a new brand for export. Because the Irish government had just introduced a scheme whereby exported brands would be given a 10-year tax holiday. So I had just started out in business with a partner in a sleazy small office in Soho in London. And I remember it was a Monday morning. We'd been working together for about a week. And I said to him, what the hell are we going to do about this Irish brief? And he said, what Irish brief? Because he was one of these guys who could switch off for the weekend and, you know, took a lot to get him back into the swing of things. But he said, what Irish brief? So I said, well, they want a brand. There are no constraints, there are no requirements, nothing. They just want a drink for export from Ireland. And I said, is there anything in my experience on Kerrygold that we can bring to bear on this? And he said, well, what happens if we mix Irish whiskey with cream? So I said, well, there's only one way to find out. Let's get out to the supermarket. International stores at the bottom of Berwick Street, where we bought some cream, we bought some Irish whiskey. Took it into the office. It was early, April the 1st, I think, which is very appropriate. We mixed it together, and it tasted absolutely disgusting. So we added some sugar. And that made things better. We put some Cadbury drinking chocolate, another trip down to the supermarket, mix it together, and actually tasted quite decent. So I said, he went to Eton in Oxford, so he was much posher than me. I said, I'm going to take this down to the company and just try it out. He said, you can't take that. These guys are serious malt whiskey, port, sherry types. I said, no, we're going to do it. So I poured the stuff into a screw-top Schweppes bottle, and took it over, and the guy I met there said, I think that's really interesting, let's do it. And we did, and we actually spent about 6 months getting the liquid about 40% correct. That's the best we could do in the time, because it was new technology. And then we set up a meeting with the Irish company, who are going to be the end users for this thing. And I said, why don't we do a printed bottle, a proper bottle, printed with a nice label on it, all embossed so that it looked really good. We don't want them to think it's something they could mess about with and change. So we took this beautiful printed bottle. We commissioned some market research in the UK, which was all negative. Men said it was a girl's drink. Women said it reminded them of kaolin and morphine, which is a diarrhea remedy. And so we decided we would suspend judgment on the research for another decade, put it in the briefcase, and we went to present in Dublin. And it was amazing. It was the only thing we presented, so there was no plan B. This was it. And that was it. That was the first label we did. It was Irish Cream Chocolate Liqueur. Mm-hmm. And they took the chocolate off, which was good because they were beginning to have ownership. But there was a nice story about that because they'd upgraded the quality of the wine after the presentation because they said, let's have the 61, not the 68, which we thought was pretty good. And I went off to the men's room halfway through and met the sales director of the company, who wasn't at the meeting. And he said, what is this garbage you're selling us? He said, it'll never work in Ireland. And he hadn't even been there. I don't know how he knew about it. That was it. Well, the story of Baileys is it's the world's biggest selling liqueur. In last year, it sold 83 million bottles. It has a net sales value of 500 million. A glass is consumed every 30 seconds worldwide. And the entire cost to launch was £50,000. And that included buying the plant. I think there were quite a lot of lunches and trips to Dublin and stuff like that. It was incredibly cheap to buy. But it was an amazing brand to be involved with. And I suppose the various things about Baileys that I learned, which I think stuck with me for the rest of my career. One is remember what you know. I think most of the ideas that one has are ideas that you pick from somewhere else, another part of your experience, another part of other people's experience. And it's important. And the Kerrygold experience was hardwired into me after working with O'Reilly. And that brought about the Baileys idea. The next thing is, and this is something I keep preaching, is market research is it's not so big.
Amen.
It really isn't. Market research is one of the most overrated. It's equivalent to Freudian psychology, in my book. It's a highly overrated, and it most of the time doesn't work. Another idea from Baileys was, I think, if you can bring an idea to life and to make it real, it's not difficult to do, particularly now with computers. You can take any idea, any concept, and turn it into reality very simply. The other thing, and this is a bit, again, against research, is that people like what they know, but they don't know what they like. So I think we put the consumer on a pedestal in terms of making a judgment about everything we do. But the consumers are not so smart. Consumers are always going to default back to something that's very familiar to them. I always find it strange that people do research on design, and they go to a highly qualified designer, and then they go and ask a bunch of people who don't have the slightest idea about design, which they can confess. And I always pick the one that's the most boring and the one that's closest. Oh, and that Baileys pack design would never have won in a research contest. But the last point, I think it's probably the most important, and it's certainly the most important lesson I ever learned, is that much as you'd like to think as a creator of ideas that you're a hero, you're not. The real hero of an idea is the buyer. And I think we should try to teach people how to buy ideas. I think it's incredibly important. You know, it's easy enough to come up with an idea, but if you don't like it, or if you can't buy it, then there's something wrong. So I think that's my feeling about heroism. And the other point is that it's 100 times easier to come up with a dozen answers to a question than to come up with a single one. The trick is the single one, but you have to believe in it. And again, this has been, I suppose I might have been richer if more people could have understood that particular mantra. You know, I think you can take any brief and come up with six answers very easily. But coming up with one that you really believe in, it may not be perfect, no idea is perfect, has to be the way forward. And I think the more people, I think in fast-moving consumer goods marketing, people believe in, you have to have six ideas. If you don't have six ideas and put them into research, you don't have anything. I think it's a complete waste of time. Anybody familiar with that place?
Mm.
On the Sunday after rugby international, there's always a million guys eating very heavy bacon butties outside. Well, this is going ahead now, another 10 or 11 years after Bailey's started. Bailey's had become one of the kind of marketing academies in Dublin. It was a place of marketing excellence in Ireland. And Bailey's had decided to launch a coffee cream liqueur. And Bailey's was saying, we have to react to that. We have to react to that. Get the guys over. And it was just before Christmas. I think it was about the 15th of December, 1984. And we came over for a brief, and we decided, because we had to get back to London to buy presents and stuff, that we'd have it at that hotel next to Dublin Airport, on the airport almost. And I smoked in those days, so I stopped in at the bar to get a box of matches, and they were pulling a pint of Guinness. And what a fantastic sight that is. I mean, it's just so good to, it's like this massive pint of Bailey's being pulled. And then it separates out into this black and white thing of absolute beauty. Anyway, we go to the meeting. The clients are there, there are about six of them. They've got a pile of whiteboards this high, looking at coffee liqueur statistics for the whole world. And I said, do you mind if I have a pint of Guinness? The guy said, look, we're a professional marketing company. We're not a booze company anymore. You can't have a pint of Guinness at 10 o'clock in the morning. So I said, please, please. Had a heavy night the night before, which was a trip. So the Guinness came in, and I said, holding it up, how would you like a coffee liqueur where you drank the coffee, the black stuff, through the cream, the white stuff? End of meeting, no whiteboards, no discussion. Off into town for a terrific lunch. And they bought the idea there and then. It was called Sheridan's. And this was a pretty senior guy in the company who had the power to buy an idea. And he bought it like that in one, just because I suggested it. That's another one. I've got a couple of wild tales from Guinness now. They aren't the ideas that I developed, but they're ideas that I was involved with. We were in the office in Greek Street in Soho one day, and a bloke from Guinness appeared. He looked very, he was in a dark suit with a black tie, grey hair. He looked a bit like an undertaker, I suppose. And he came in very quiet, and he said, do you have a fridge? So I said, yes. So he went away and came back, and he said, tell us about yourselves. So we talked for an hour or so, and then he disappeared to the fridge and came back with a glass and a bottle, and he poured the contents of the bottle into the glass, and it was like totally black. It was like the black part of Guinness without the white part. And then he put his hand in his pocket and he pulled out a plastic syringe. Anybody familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was totally weird. I mean, he took this thing, he didn't say anything, and he took the thing and he went like that. And he produced the most amazing pint of draft Guinness I'd ever drunk. It was called bottle draft Guinness. Mm. We called it draft Guinness, and it was incredibly. And we worked with them to bring it to market, and the advertising agency produced wonderful ads like Ed for Home. It was interesting though, because I did a bit of research amongst Guinness drinkers, and It tended to nudge up against the fabric of Irish social life. Because the guys said, well, it's a pretty good pint, but it's not a great pint. And their excuse for escaping the home to the pub was suddenly under threat. But But I drank an incredible amount of it. The next one is Let There Be Light. In the late 60s, early 70s, there was an incredibly successful brand in America called Miller Lite. You've probably seen it. It still exists. It's a very what they did was they cut the strength from 5% to 4% and advertised it using retired sportsmen saying things which you could never do now. But these were retired sporting heroes saying they preferred Miller Lite because it was less filling than other beers. And it was a huge success. So somebody decided to do the same thing in Ireland. And they produced Guinness Light. And does anyone remember the ads? There was the Richard Strauss Zarathustra space anthem. And they were saying all kinds of things about they said it couldn't be done. As I said in my book, which I'll tell you about later, it was kind of equating watered-down Guinness with man walking on the moon. That's my innovation thing, you see. And it was a total and utter disaster. We did some research on it in Galway to find out what people thought of it. And one guy said he walked into this pub and the place was festooned with Guinness Light memorabilia. And he said, I think I'll try a pint of that. So he ordered it in a special Guinness Light glass saying, look at me, I'm drinking Guinness Light. And he said, as I put it to my lips, a hand tapped me on the back and said, you're drinking ladies' Guinness, are you? And what they'd done, you see, they'd had a garage full of research on how great the idea was. But they never understood the dynamic of drinking. They never talked to older guys in the pub who were going to damn this thing. And that's how it was killed. I remember a guy in a group saying, they said it couldn't be done in the ads. They were damn right it couldn't. So that's another one. One of the things, if you spend your whole life developing brands for other people and they're quite successful, there's a tendency to think, well, maybe we should do one for ourselves. But developing the brand's the easy bit. It's the financial bit that's so difficult. And what we decided to do when I left Diageo was to develop a brand that would compete with Baileys, because Baileys represented the gold standard of that category. And so we wanted to compete with it. So we decided to produce a super premium cream liqueur with the best whiskey in the world, with Belgian chocolate, with the best cocoa, the best vanilla, the best cream. And there it is. Anybody heard of it? Just a moment.
Yes.
Also, there's an outside chance I might get my money back then. Okay. So Cool Swan was, what we did when we designed it was we decided to do everything that Baileys wasn't. So Baileys is short and fat and brown and sweet. And we were tall and slim and drier, with more of a spirit taste. So there was that one. Are there any more? Oh, the last one. Interesting challenge, which is when Diageo was formed and Guinness UD and IDB came together, there was lots of hands across the sea stuff saying, you know, let's see how we can bring our, if we can synergize our respective marketing and technical abilities. And so what they decided to do was they said, why don't we do a Guinness whiskey? Wouldn't that be a great idea? Guinness is a brand with a tremendously strong equity. What happens if we take it into whiskey? And any thoughts, Scotch or Irish?
Irish.
I mean, although probably more than 50% of people who drink Guinness don't even know where Ireland is or what Ireland is, it's still nevertheless part of Ireland's DNA. And to make it Scotch just doesn't make sense. It also, but there was a big problem with this because at the time, Diageo didn't own any Irish whiskey. So if Guinness Irish whiskey became a huge success, they would A, be making Pernod Ricard rich, and B, they would enable Pernod Ricard to hold them to ransom on price, because the more successful it became, the more expensive it might become to buy. And then I had, that's probably the most exciting idea I've ever had, I think. I said that the answer to the question, has anyone been around a whiskey distillery?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what happens when you in a whiskey, the first stage of whiskey distillation is?
Malting.
So what you do is, in effect, you make a beer. And then you take the beer and you distill it, and then you put it into barrels for 3 years, and then it becomes whiskey. And my solution was this. Not to do either, just simply to distill Guinness. So the answer to this was, we would call the product distilled Guinness. It would be the benefits are various. First of all, you aren't controlled by the Scotch Whiskey Association or the Irish Whiskey Association. Secondly, you make it today and you can drink it tomorrow. You don't have to put it in a barrel for 3 years. Thirdly, its provenance is Guinness, so therefore you can make it in Nigeria, Ghana, and everywhere else. I thought that was a great idea. I love it. And but nobody else did. I forgot to say. Okay, well, I'm coming to the end. And the various lessons, I suppose. I think ever since Bailey's, which was 74, and I'm still working when anybody will have me, I've always believed in a single answer. And I would counsel everybody here to aim for the single answer. Don't mess about with five or six ideas. Too easy, has no credibility. So no beauty contest. Don't go out and ask people which idea. I once did a whiskey with a purple shining label, because no one had ever done a whiskey in a purple shining label. And people went out and did research, and people, consumers said, whiskey doesn't come in bottles with shining purple labels. So they killed the idea. How crazy is that? Again, about market, no beauty contest, market research isn't perfect. The other thing is, aim for the top if you can. Middle management doesn't have the power to buy ideas. I mean, the only time I was really able to sell ideas quickly and effectively was to top management. When Bombay Sapphire went out of Diageo because of monopolies and mergers, the CEO said, we need a new gin, and I want it on the market in 3 months. Now, he wasn't interested in what process we used to get there. He just said, you know, you have to do it, do it. And it was great. I think we are smarter than consumers, and I think a lot of companies talk about the consumer being the ultimate arbiter of what we do. I don't think they are. I made the point earlier about the buyer being the hero. My last point, I suppose, is in any category in which you work, the product has to be brilliant. I mean, I've worked in vodkas, and vodka is defined as something that is colorless, tasteless, and odorless. But you can still make a better vodka if you try hard enough, and I did too. One was made of grapes, not grain, and the other was smoother than any other vodka. So wherever you go, you could do it better. Anything else? Oh, there's a great quote by an academic, which is unusual. The best ideas are right in front of us, hidden in plain sight. Innovation seldom depends on discovering subtle or obscure elements, but on seeing the obvious with fresh eyes. And I think after nearly 50 years of doing it, that if I go down the headstone route, I think that's going to be there on the short list. Last point is, I've got to sell my book. I've just written a book about it, which is called That Ship Will Never Sell. And the title, it's what somebody said about Bailey's in New York when he first saw it. And he had the good grace. But blowing my own trumpet is a good client. I'd never met the guy who designed the cover. But he read the book, and he said he was very intimidated by this one solution thing. And then he pulled this out of his bag, and I'd never met him before. And that's what it looks like. And that's what it looks like.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
And that's the end of my story. Thank you very much for listening.